Okay, so hi everyone. Thanks for being here. I'm Etienne Chauchot, and I'm going to talk to you about universal metrics with Apache Beam. A little word about myself. I'm a software engineer at Talend and an Apache Beam committer. My areas of expertise are integration software, big data, and open source. A little word about Talend. We do data integration software that basically allow to create a job by assembling UI components. So it can be big data pipelines or like ETL or ESB jobs. The agenda for today will be an introduction to Beam and the portability framework. I will then show you what the Beam metrics are and how does a pipeline author use them. We will then remove our user hats and take our, let's say, architect's hats, and I will show you the inside of the runner, the outside of the runner with metrics extraction, and also between the runners for the portable metrics. I will then switch to an example use case and the usual current state and future work. So I'll start with an introduction to Beam. I'm sure most of you have already had that, but for those who were not there, I will proceed. I will not go through the whole Beam model with windowing, triggering, watermarks, and so on, because it's not needed for this talk. I will just focus on what's needed for the talk. And I will not talk about the Daltons either. So a bit of history, it started in 2004 with MapReduce, which is the research paper in Google, which basically defines a select, huge select, and a group map. It evolved into Flume Java, which is a high-level API, and Millwheel, which is, let's say, a framework for designing streaming pipelines. They were merged into Dataflow, which is the hosted engine for designing batch and streaming pipelines. And the SDK was donated to the ASF in 2016, and it became the Beam project, and it's maintained as the Beam project by the community ever since. And since version 2.0, the SDK in Dataflow is Beam. First, a bit thing. Beam is a unified programming model between batch and streaming for designing big data pipeline. Why unified? It's because we believe that there's no real distinction between a batch pipeline and a streaming pipeline. The only difference is that the batch pipeline just deals with a finite collection of data, and a streaming pipeline deals with an infinite collection of data. So in the end, a batch pipeline can be seen as a subset of a streaming pipeline, and Beam provides everything needed, like windowing, to be able to split this infinite collection of data into finite chunks. That's the Beam stack that you've already seen. On the bottom, you have the runner. That's the translation part that translates Beam codes into native engine execution engine codes. We have several runners, so to generate Spark native code or Flink native code, and they are not all there. On top of that, we have the Beam model, which basically defines all the concepts of Beam, and which are presented to the user through the language SDK. Language SDK, there are three different languages, Java, Python, and Go. And we also provide libraries for usual transforms and IOs. Of course, on top of that, you have the user codes, the codes written by pipeline authors that use the SDK and the transform provided. The Beam transforms, actually, there are only two native transforms. The first one is the PARDU, which stands for Parallel Do. It's basically a good old flat map, like applying a function in parallel on a collection of data, parallel collection of data. And the group by key, which basically groups elements into chunks and allows to process the groups in parallel. And all the other transforms are just composites of the two previous ones. Like even the reducer, which is called the combine in Beam, is just a group by key with applying a user-defined function for combining elements. That's an example pipeline, actually the usual example pipeline of counting words on the text file. It's just there to show you what it looks like. So there is the pipeline object. We also have the abstraction that you've already heard about, the abstraction of the data across the cluster that is called the P collection. And we start by applying a transform, which is a special transform, which is an IO, by reading text files from a Google storage. And at the end, applying the very same transform, which is textio.write, to write to the Google storage. And in the between, we just apply several transforms, like flap map count or map elements. So that's a very simple pipeline. Of course, it doesn't have to be straight that way. That's just to simplify the example. That's the Beam view. Actually, Beam is not, as it's a translation layer, it's not tied to any particular language. You can write your pipelines using one of the SDKs, like Java, Python, or Go, and it's supposed to be executable on all the targeted execution engines. But actually, that's the target vision. It's ongoing work, actually, and it is called the Portability Framework, and it will be the focus of my next three slides. You've already seen that with Ismail, a little bit different, but this is how it works today. Consider, without the portability, consider you have, let's say, a pipeline that you want to run on a Java runner, such as Spark. So you pick up the Java SDK, you write your pipeline with, and you then, let's say, ship package your pipeline code with the Spark running libs in that case, and you upload this app to the master of the cluster, such as let's say Mesos or Yarn. And when the pipeline gets executed, it's just like a monolithic thing. I mean, the user-defined function that you write plus the runner libs gets together inside a worker of the cluster. But for portability, the aim is to address this issue. Without portability, you see we're monolithic. If you write your pipeline using a given language SDK, then you need to choose a runner that is written with this very same language. So if you write it using Python, then you cannot run on Spark runner because it's a Java-based runner. So the portability framework addresses this problem by trying to decouple the SDK from the runner by introducing two containers. One is called the SDK harness. The other one is called the runner harness. And the SDK harness is language-specific harness. So you have one for Python, Go, and Java. And the runner harness is the running part, like the runner libs plus the native execution engine libs. And in the between, you have a communication layer that is called the FN API that provides a set of services like job control or data access, artifact retrieval, and things like this. So if you have such a pipeline, actually this is the DAG of the pipeline, direct acyclic graph of the pipeline, and consider you have part of this pipeline that is written in Python. So you have a function that is written in Python, then this function gets executed in the Python SDK harness, and this harness communicates with the runner harness through gRPC calls. We also introduced a portable definition of the pipeline that is written in Protobuf. So that's the end of the portability introduction. I could say a little more, but this is not the aim of the talk. I will switch to the points, like what are the Beam metrics? Well, it is what users can do, can specify on all the transforms of their pipelines to be collected by the execution engine at runtime. They are declared at construction time, meaning that you declare them in your pipeline code. There are three kinds of metrics that are pretty similar to Drop Wizard. There's the counter one that is a long, basically a long value that can be incremented or decremented. There's a gauge that reports the latest value out of the overall reported values. And there's this distribution that reports sum, mean, max, count, and mean values. It's pretty similar to histograms, but we don't have percent quantiles. There are some properties to the metrics. They are accessible during the execution of the pipeline or only at the end of a batch pipeline. That's a runner choice. I remember for Splunk Runner, Beam version, I think it was below 2.3, we had problems in batch pipelines. We had the values of the metrics only at the end of batch pipeline, but it was fixed. Also, these metrics have these properties. They are named. They are defined with an actual name and a namespace. And the namespace is there to distinguish metrics that can have the same name. They are scoped to what we called a step, which is basically a transform in the DAG. And they are dynamically created because we don't need to pre-declare metrics in the runner configuration or in the engine configuration. They are just created during the runtime of the pipeline. Also, they degrade gracefully because if a given runner does not support a given metric, then it just doesn't report it. There will be no failure of the pipeline. I'll do a little parenthesis on bundling. You remember I talked about P collections, which stands for parallel collection, which is basically the data spread across the cluster. These P collections are divided into bundles. And bundles are two things. First, it's the parallelization unit. And the second thing is that it's also the commit unit. When a runner processes a bundle successfully, it commits this bundle. So, and also the division between the division of the P collection into bundle is also a choice of the runner, because if the runner is more streaming oriented, then it will tend to create more lower size bundles. If it's more batch oriented, then it will tend to create some more higher size bundles. And what's important about bundling is the retrial. Actually, with Beam, if there is a failure on one element of a given bundle, then you will retry, the runner will retry the bundle in its whole. So consider my previous example of you having a pipeline that defines a single pardu, and this pardu applies on a P collection that is divided into two bundles, bundle A and bundle B. And so the bundles are processed in parallel over the cluster. In that case, the cluster has two workers, so the worker one processes bundle A, and the bundle B is processed by worker two. But there is a failure in processing the third element of bundle B. Then in that case, the bundle B gets retried in its whole, and it can be retried by another worker. So in the end, that's what happens. You have bundle B and bundle A that are processed by worker one. That leads me to defining what are committed and attempted metrics. Attempted metrics are the metrics values for all these attempts, and committed metrics are the values only for successful attempts. So if I take my previous example of this very simple pipeline with the pardu, and I just had a counting function that just counts the number of records, right? Then in that case, the committed counter value will be 9, because there is only 9 elements in the P collections, in this P collection. But the attempted counter value would be 11, because elements 1 and 2 of bundle B have been retried. You must know that not all the runners support committed metrics. Actually, there's only Dataflow that supports them and only in batch mode, as far as I know. Also, metrics are queryable. The user uses what we call the pipeline results, which is basically the interface, the user interface with the job for the status, metrics, and so on. And call the metrics method on this object, you get results, and these results can be applied filters that define the name you want to get, the metrics name you want to get, and also the steps in which the metrics are defined. Remember, the steps are the transforms. You get an output result for all the three kinds of metrics, the counters, distribution, and gauges, and each one of them just recalls the name, the step, and committed and attempted values. So let's switch to how a given pipeline and author use the metric system. Take a look at the right-hand side of the screen. We define a counting2fn function that is basically an identity function. It just reads input and outputs the very same input, so identity function. We just had a counter that counts the elements. So we define this counter at the beginning by applying a namespace called namespace and a name called counter1. And when we process the elements, we just call ink on the counter to update its value. On the left-hand side, you have the pipeline code. So it's pretty similar to the example in the introduction. You apply a parser with this counting2fn function. And on the pipeline results, you call the metrics. And you apply a given filter on these results, asking for the metrics named counter1 in namespace called namespace. The same goes for the distribution metric. You define it by calling the static method distribution, and also you can update it by calling the update method on the object. Same goes for gauge. You define it, assigning it a namespace and a name, and you set the value using a method on the object. Pretty simple. Let's remove our user hats and take our architect's hats. I will focus on the inside of the runner regarding only the metrics. So that's an architecture diagram that shows, for now, only the reading part of the metrics. So you can see that there are blue components. In that case, there are beam runner, there are beam managed components that are part of the runner side. And you see also red components that are beam managed components that are part of the SDK side. Everything is centered around the metrics container step map, which is one per pipeline, and which basically is a huge map to, let's say, record the different metrics containers for all the steps of the pipeline. These metrics containers, there is one per bundle and transform. So in my previous example, if you have this very simple pipeline with only one transform and it executes over a P collection that is divided into two bundles, then you will get two metrics containers, all right? And their job is to just track the metric cells that are there just to accumulate the actual metrics values. So when a user requests a metric, then it asks the pipeline result, like I previously said. And this request gets forwarded to the metrics container step map that in return updates, reads all its containers, and updates them by aggregating all these metric sales values of the different metrics containers. And as an output, the user gets a metric result. That's pretty simple. And of course, on the top right-hand side of the diagram, you can see that there is also a possibility to extract metrics directly from the metric sales, but it is only the runner that can do that. It's for system metrics, for example. If you want to, let's say, count the number of lake data or drop elements, then it will be done that way. Let's switch to the right part of the metrics inside the runner. Well, you see on the bottom that there is a green component that is not a beam managed component. That is an execution engine native component. Actually, the accumulator name is the name of the components for Flink and Spark engines. And their job, actually, they are what is parallel about metrics. Their job is to store parallel versions of metrics container step map. And when the execution engine merges two accumulators, in return, it just merges two metrics container step map, then in return, update all the containers by merging all these cells together. And so that's the merging part. But of course, when the user code gets executed, so in my example, the counting doFN that counts elements, then when this code is executed by the runner, of course, the runner updates the metric cells when he sees the counter.inc. But we added some little things because we wanted to, let's say, have the metric, the beam metrics values inside the monitoring features of Flink or Spark, or even if you've written your pipeline using Beam, it would be cool to have in the native Spark, in the native Flink UI, the values of the Beam metrics. So that's why we added this thing. It's pretty simple. When the runner processes a bundle and finish processes a bundle, it just triggers a call to the metrics container step map to extract the metrics and then update the native execution engine metrics components. For Flink, they are based on Drop Wizard. So once again, the green component is not managed by Beam, it's the native ones. So that's all for the architecture inside the runner. Let's switch to the outside of the runner now that we've seen the inside. So we will talk about metrics extraction, but first let's ask a question. Why should metrics extraction be independent from the Shazen engine? First of all, that's because not all the engines ship a way to extract metrics, right? If they provide their own monitoring UI, maybe they will not provide a way to extract to a metrics backend. The main point also is consistency. There is no common set of monitoring backend supports towards the different engines. I mean, some might support only Ganglia, others might support Prometheus, or others might support Graphite and Ganglia, so there's no common set. Also, there is a difference, like I said before, there is a difference of availability time of the metrics values depending on the runner. So in the end, Beam as a project, as the pipeline need to be, the pipelines need to be portable, then in the end, we need as a Beam project to have a common flow of metrics, no matter the chosen runner, no matter the choice of the user, if he chooses to execute on Spark or on Flink, we have to have a common flow of the metrics. And one final question is, what if you want to extract the metrics, but not in the native Spark or Flink UI, but you want to extract the metrics in your own application UI that you've did, that you've done? So that leads me to these design principles. First, we refuse to do some client polling, like JMX, for example, because the infrastructure might change. I mean, we use cluster managers such as Mesos or Yarn, so they might spin up new workers, and we don't want the users to have to know the topology of the cluster to request the JMX beans, for example. And also, the metrics that would be required will be requested this way will not be aggregated metrics, right? You will have values for the worker one, values for worker two, values for worker three, and you will need to aggregate them afterwards. So that's bad. And one final thing is that It would lead to timing issues. Consider the example you have a batch pipeline, very short batch pipeline. As a user, you would request JMX, and you would end up requesting metrics that are no longer there just because the pipeline has ended. So no client polling. We decided also to push from the runner rather than pull from the SDK. That's because we wanted to be as close as possible to the runner, because the runner needs to decide when to push for committed metrics, for example. And also, like I said before, in the future, we wanted to have system metrics, like having the ability to count number of failed elements or things like this. So for all these, we need to be at the runner side and not pulling the pipeline result or something like this. Sorry. Also, we chose to do some periodic aggregation and not event-based, because if we prefer to use send aggregated values to avoid the metrics backend having to merge themselves, okay? And also because runners know how to merge their own metrics. And one final point is that we decided that BIM manages its own things. That's once again for a consistency, because there is, like I said, heterogeneous support towards the different engines of the metrics backends, so we prefer to manage our own things. So that's the previous diagram. I will spare you it for now. We just added some little thing on the left-hand side. That's a service that is called the Metrics Pusher. And the Metrics Pusher is there to periodically request metrics. Sorry. And it does so by just asking the very same way a user would have done, by asking the metrics container step map, and then regularly push the serialized metrics version, the serialized metrics values, to an external backend, metrics backend, through the metrics syncs. So right now, there is only an HTTP REST endpoint sync, and there is a graphite that I'm currently coding. But there is an exception to all these designs. It's the case of running hosted engines like Dataflow, for example. In that case, as the engine is hosted, it's not the BIM runner code that runs the actual pipeline. It's just an empty shell that just serializes the job's definition and then send it through gRPC calls or REST calls to the actual execution engine. So in that case, like I said, we wanted to have the metrics extraction as close as possible to the actual engine. So the metrics pusher service needs to be instantiated as close as possible to the engine, so inside the real engine. And there will be two solutions for that. The simplest one is that Dataflow, for example, will receive the job definition, and it could use it to instantiate, have all the configuration to instantiate the metrics pusher service. Or we can do something a little more hacky, is you have the DAG of the pipeline, but you can pre-process it in the runner. So you could add a fake pardue that the user has not written, and this pardue just regularly pushes values. But there might be problems with network. If you are on a hosted solution and you want to extract metrics with the outside world, you could hit network problems. You would maybe need to open routes or just, let's say, use compliant output syncs like PubSub. I will then switch, now that we've seen the inside of the runner, the outside of the runner, I will talk about between the runners, so the portability layer. So it's called portable metrics. It's metrics in the portability world. You remember I talked in the introduction about FN API, which is the communication layer between the runner SD, the runner harness and the SDK harness. And you remember also that I said in the introduction that there is a portable pipeline definition. So metrics, portable metrics are defined in this portable definition of the pipeline in protobuf. And also there is a communication between SDK harness and runner harness that is on a bundle basis. And there is regular updates in the communication between the runner harness. It asks regularly the SDK harness for updates, and these updates contain matrix values. Also, the runner still can differentiate committed and attempted metrics. And I must say that this is a very early stage. Everything related to portability is a very early stage. Right now, for the portable metrics, there is only the design of the communication between the two harnesses and a first implementation of the Python SDK that is done. So that's a sequence diagram just to show you an example of the communication of the metrics over the FN API. So consider my previous example from the beginning. You have a very simple pipeline with a pardu, and this pardu has the counting do FN that just counts the elements of the pick collection, right? But you chose to target a Java runner, let's say Flink, for example, okay? But you've written the counting do FN using Python SDK. So in the end, the counting do FN, which is Python, will run in the Python SDK harness, right? And the runner harness, all the libs with Flink runner libs and Flink native libs will be the Java runner harness then. So it starts, the runner starts by asking the SDK to register the counting do FN, then to request, he requests to process the first bundle and sends the bundle data. So the SDK harness starts processing the bundle by just executing the counting do FN on this bundle. And while it does so, the Java runner harness just regularly asks for bundle progress. And in the response, it gets dirty metrics values. Why dirty? Because they're not, there's the values only for this particular bundle. They are absolute values, actually. And at the end of the processing of this bundle, you just, the SDK harness just sends the work output plus the final dirty metrics value. And in return, like I said in the architecture part, the runner harness would just update the metric cells and commit the bundle and the metrics. So these portable metrics come with new features. They are extended with custom user ones. And the two scopes are defined, user scope and the system scope. And there are two flavors of metrics. The regular ones that I previously talked about, the counter, distribution, engage. And also one that was added that is more an event-based metric, that is the monitored state. Once again, it's very early stage, right? So it's in the definition, it's in the process of definition. So the monitored state should be something more complex, like table or data. So you consider an example of a streaming pipeline that just gives update statuses about files that are stored on a file system. So they just give updates about my to-do list, for example. So you will have such a metric containing three columns, the file name, the last modification, which is today, and the current size, which is too big. I will switch to an example use case. Actually, it's a talent example use case. This is a product called Data Streams, which is a pre-version delivered product. And it is based on BIM. Its job is to generate big data pipelines. So it relies on BIM for that. So in that case, I don't see if you've seen it properly, but It just reads Kafka messages, so it's a streaming pipeline. It cleans the data, then it applies a sliding window to it, then it groups by departments, filters the Spark departments, and outputs the result to another Kafka topic. So what's important in that is that it's our own UI, right? And we still have metrics. And these are metrics, BIM metrics, actually. We are measuring the throughput, so we count the number of records processed by second, 18 in that case. We count the number of bytes processed per second, 53, and the number of records processed so far. So, and we output these pretty graphics. So how does it work in the inside? Of course, it leverages the metrics pusher. We have the data stream executor component that has nothing to do with BIM. It's just a data stream component. And its job is to receive the order of running a pipeline and then submit a job to an actual backend. So the backend is the execution engine, such as Dataflow hosted engine or a local Spark runner, Spark engine, sorry, or Flink cluster, or all the compatible execution engine of BIM. And while the process, the pipeline is executing, it just regularly push the metric values to a REST endpoint hosted on the data stream executor side. So it uses for that the metrics pusher. And then when it receives REST requests, the data stream executor just forges messages to send to the actual application UI. It has nothing to do, this Kafka broker, with the one that is defined in the pipeline definition. So let's switch to the end, the current state and future work. Still, a few runners need to implement the metrics API. For Apex and Gearpump runners, there's not even metrics support, right? BIM metrics support. Also, a few runners have started to implement the portability framework. It's an ongoing work for Dataflow and Flink. And for regarding the portable metrics, like I said, there is only the communication protocol that is defined, the communication between SDK harness and runner harness, and a first step of implementation in the Python SDK. And like I said, most of the runners don't support committed metrics. And we target to add system metrics, like I said, for runner instrumentation, like counting failing elements or things like this. And regarding the metrics pusher feature, it's wired up on the Spark runner side and on the Flink runner side, and it's an ongoing work on the Dataflow engine. For the metrics syncs, of course, the metrics sync API is defined. There's a link below. The reference HTTP REST sync is available, and I'm currently coding the graphite sync. And the aim is to implement all the popular sync backends, like Prometheus or Ganglia. I encourage you to contribute new syncs if you want. I will be happy to review your PRs. And there's the API then and the reference implementation links. If you have to remember three things about this talk, is that metrics can be defined in user code and collected in the native UI. Also, they can be extracted to external backend metrics independently from the execution engine. And also, metrics in the future will be portable to be able to write pipeline with whatever SDK to run with whatever runner. If you have question, I have, well, no more time, maybe just one question. So a bit of references and a big thank you.